Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for December 2nd, 2014. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'm speaking with Peter Littlefield and Natalia Jura about how mutations in a catalytically inactive tyrosine kinase receptor may contribute to cancer. There are four human epidermal growth factor receptors, EGFR, HER2, HER3, and HER4. These receptors are tyrosine kinases, and they transduce signaling by extracellular ligands of the epidermal growth factor family. Ligand binding induces these receptors to form homodimeric or heterodimeric complexes, which in turn causes the intracellular kinase domains of the receptors to become activated to transduce signaling into the cell. EGFR, HER2, and HER4 are catalytically active kinases, but HER3 has almost no catalytic activity, so it's often referred to as a pseudokinase. Therefore, HER3 cannot signal as a homodimer. It must form heterodimers with one of the catalytically active receptors in order to transduce signaling. Cancer-causing mutations in kinases often enhance the catalytic activity of the kinase, resulting in too much signaling and uncontrolled cell growth. Even though HER3 is catalytically inactive, mutations in HER3 are associated with some cancers. To understand how mutations in HER3 contribute to oncogenesis, Peter Littlefield, Natalia Jura, and their colleagues performed structural and biochemical studies to determine how normal and cancer-associated forms of HER3 enhance signaling. Jura and Littlefield spoke to me from the University of California, San Francisco. Peter and Dr. Jura, welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast.
Hello, how are you?
Nice to be here.
How does ligand binding induce signaling through epidermal growth factor receptors?
Epidermal growth factor receptors are, like other receptor tyrosine kinases, activated through dimerization that results in the activation of their intracellular catalytic domains, which are called the kinase domains. And when these kinase domains become activated, they phosphorylate intracellular targets. Those targets are actually tyrosine residues that are primarily located within the receptors themselves. And then those phosphorylated residues recruit other signaling proteins, resulting in activation of cellular events that are critical for cell growth, proliferation, and survival in the case of epidermal growth factor receptors. So in this regard, EGFR family of receptors follows this canonical mechanism for signaling by receptor tyrosine kinases. But there is actually something unique about the way that EGF receptor kinases activate. Typically, when kinases activate in a receptor dimer, this occurs through transphosphorylation. And transphosphorylation is what is initiated by receptor dimerization. But in case of EGF receptors, the kinases do not need to transphosphorylate. Actually, they need to form a very specific interaction, which is a dimer. That's an asymmetric dimer, and in this asymmetric dimer, one kinase becomes an allosteric activator of another kinase, an allosterically activated. This is very unique, and it hasn't been seen or observed for any other receptor tyrosine kinases, but it's absolutely essential for activation of these receptors.
Whereas EGFR, HER2, and HER4 are catalytically active tyrosine kinases, HER3 is classified as a pseudokinase. What kinase activity does HER3 lack? Does it lack the ability to autophosphorylate, or is it unable to phosphorylate downstream targets?
So HER3 is really fundamentally disabled in being a kinase. And what this means is that it cannot efficiently phosphorylate either itself or other downstream targets. And this is because HER3 has mutations in several key catalytic residues in the catalytic motif that disable this activity. So HER3 does seem to have some residual catalytic activity, as has been shown by Mark Lemon's group at the University of Pennsylvania. But this catalytic activity seems to be about 1,000-fold weaker than other receptors of the HER family and has not been shown to be required for any biological process. So for these reasons, HER3 is generally thought of as a catalytically inactive receptor.
Since HER3, then, is basically catalytically inactive, how does it participate in these signaling complexes? What's its role?
For what we know, HER3 signaling is absolutely dependent on its dimerization of active HER receptors. So HER3 by itself is essential. It's essential for embryonic development, but it can only be manifested through dimerization with other members of the EGFR family of receptors. The way HER3 can signal is because it has multiple tyrosine residues in its C-terminal tail, and these residues become phosphorylated when HER3 dimerizes with another HER receptor, which is catalytically active, and then goes on and phosphorylates the tyrosine residues. And then the phosphorylated tyrosine residues in HER3 recruit downstream signaling components, primarily PI3 kinase, which is a very important pathway downstream for HER3. So the way HER3 actually can even enter and form a functional dimer with another receptor is because of that unique mechanism of activation that's operative in the EGFR family of receptors that I just mentioned a while ago. Because the mechanism by which the kinases activate is not dependent on transphosphorylation, but it's allosteric, so it depends on formation of a protein-protein interface. The catalytically inactive HER3 actually acts as an allosteric activator and activates its dimerization partners through that protein-protein interface. So it doesn't matter that it's catalytically inactive, it can still perform this allosteric function and hence form those active signaling complexes with other members of the EGFR family.
So, Peter, you solved the crystal structure of the kinase domain of HER3 in complex with the kinase domain of EGFR. What did that structure tell you about how HER3 contributes to signaling?
So our structure of the EGFR-HER3 complex really allowed us to visualize HER3 in its physiological role, that is, as an allosteric activator of these signaling complexes for really the first time. And this crystal structure demonstrated that, indeed, HER3 does act as an allosteric activator in these complexes, and its contribution to signaling is really essentially to stimulate the catalytic activity of its dimerization partners, in this case, EGFR. So these results have previously only been explored through biochemical experiments, and as well, our crystal structure really demonstrated for the first time the role of a domain that is proximal to the kinase domain, called the juxtamembrane segment, in regulation of heterodimeric HER3 complexes. So we also found that the interaction in these HER3 dimers, and indeed dimers of, in general, HER receptors, is quite non-optimal. So it's much weaker than it could be. And this is something we believe is essential for timely regulation of receptor activation when you don't want the signaling to be too strong. So, for instance, we think that this non-optimal interaction really allows for very specific activation under ligand stimulation, where the organism really needs to control when these receptors are active and when they are not.
So that's the wild-type form of HER3. What about the cancer-associated forms of HER3? How do those function differently from the wild-type HER3? How do they enhance signaling?
So what we are showing is that the mutations found in HER3 in human cancers, they actually do not reactivate catalytic activity, which I think was a more intuitive way of thinking of them, but they improve the ability of HER3 to function as this allosteric activator of other HER receptors. And the way it works is that the mutations improve the physical interaction between HER3 kinase and another HER receptor kinase in a dimer. In our case, we showed it for EGF receptor kinase. By improving this non-optimal interface that Peter just talked about. And this results in increased catalytic rate of EGFR and subsequently more robust phosphorylation of both receptors and more potent downstream signaling. The cancer mutants are different from the wild-type HER3 in that regard, and because they are so potent, now they can actually drive signaling by HER3 complexes with other HER receptors, even in the absence of a ligand. So now you don't have to wait for an activating ligand. Those complexes are actually constitutively on. And we believe that this is probably what contributes to cancer. And one thing that I would like to note here is that we are not the first one to describe this function of the mutations in HER3 in cancer as not affecting the catalytic activity of HER3 itself. This was really elegantly described in the cancer cell study by the group of Shekhar Seshagiri from Genentech last year. our main contribution is to explain how those mutations work at the molecular and structural basis and really explain how they contribute to activation of HER3 in the context of the activation mechanism in the EGFR family of receptors.
About the HER3 mutations that have been reported to be associated with some tumors, those mutants can drive signaling in the absence of ligand. Are those cancer-associated HER3 mutations the primary drivers of oncogenesis, or are they just one factor among many that promote tumor cell growth?
So this is a really important question and something that really remains to be determined. HER3 signaling has for some time been shown to be important for both cancer development as well as the establishment of drug resistance to therapeutic agents that target EGFR or HER2. But really only in the past few years have HER3 mutations actually been discovered in human cancers. So whether these mutations are actually a primary driver of oncogenesis is not yet clear. But I would say it does seem likely, given the general understanding in cancer biology of oncogenic activators, that really multiple mutagenic events, including HER3 mutations, will be required to drive the formation of a tumor.
Is there any evidence that disrupting the ability of the mutant forms of HER3 to enhance signaling by its heterodimerization partners could inhibit tumor growth?
So yes and no. What has been shown, and this has been shown very nicely in that study by the Seshagiri group from Genentech, was that when you treat cells that express mutant HER3 versions with antibodies targeting HER3 and EGFR, which are designed to disrupt interaction between EGFR and HER3 and HER3 and other HER receptors, this actually really significantly inhibits the tumorigenic potential of these cells. So in this regard, yes. However, at present, there are no agents that directly target the allosteric interface that could really, answer your question directly. And because of the lack of this agent, we cannot really test this hypothesis that disrupting this interface is going to be beneficial for cancer patients. There is a lot of effort to make such inhibitors. They are just not very straightforward to make, not very easy to make. But I think what our work has shown is that there is really need for development of such therapeutic agents because they could be really, really beneficial in patients that have mutations in HER3 that make HER3 a better allosteric activator. So, I think the entire field is looking forward to seeing such agents being made.
Natalia, Peter, thanks for speaking with me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Peter Littlefield and Natalia Jura discussing a paper published in the December 2nd issue of Science Signaling by Littlefield and colleagues. You can read that article online at stke.sciencemag.org. The Science Signaling Podcast is a production of Science Signaling and the American Association for the Advancement of Science. Advancing science, serving society. If you have any comments or questions, you can write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and AAAS, thanks for listening.